page 74. From middle pile. Well, my next suchness as to us. Did you find? Next. Suchness has two aspects, if predicated in words, one is that it is true empty, for this aspect can, in the final sense, reveal what is real. The other is that it is truly non-empty, for its essence itself is endowed with undefiled and excellent qualities. Number one, truly empty. Suchness is empty because from the beginning it has never been related to any defiled states of existence. It is free from all marks of the individual distinction of things. And it has nothing to do with thoughts conceived by a deluded mind. It should be understood that the essential nature of suchness is neither with marks nor without marks, neither not with marks, not without marks, nor is it both with and without marks simultaneously. It is neither with a single mark nor with different marks, neither not with a single mark nor not with different marks, nor is it both with a single and with different marks simultaneously. In short, since all unenlightened men discriminate with their deluded minds from moment to moment, they are alienated from suchness. Hence the definition empty. But once they are free from their deluded minds, they will find that there is nothing to be negated. Number two, truly non-empty. Since it has been made clear that the essence of all things is empty, that is, devoid of illusions. The true mind is eternal, permanent, immutable, pure, and self-sufficient. Therefore, it is called non-empty. And also, there is no trace of particular marks to be noted in it, as it is the sphere that transcends thoughts and is in harmony with enlightenment alone. Okay. In terms of the reality of all things, all beings, the true independent from words, the truth independent from the words, is described as inexplicable and unthinkable and the foregoing deportions in order to make the truth itself fresh in one's mind. That is the portion we learned so far. This portion we have read goes into the truth in words. In the previous portions, the truth independent from the words. Finally, the truth is described in the simplest word, so-called truth, or one mind. And through this word, the one mind, or the truth, we have to know the spirit of the word, in other words, beyond the word. We have to go beyond the word, the truth, or one mind. That is the purpose of the purpose of their using the words in order to let you know the truth. What the real truth? So finally, we cannot help to come to reach the simplest word in order to know real truth. That is called the truth or one mind. But in this portion, we try to describe the truth depending on the words. So, naturally it goes without saying that explanation of the truth in words is very provisional. Because the truth itself is not that which it should be uttered in words. Because in your previous portion, truth is beyond words. So first paragraph it says there such misses two aspects if indicated in words. One is that it is truly empty, sunya in Sanskrit. Truly empty. For this aspect can, in the final sense, reveal what is real. The other is that it is truly non-empty, as sunya. For its essence itself is endowed with undefiled and excellent quality. So, two kinds of truth in words. One is truly empty, but that empty doesn't negate deny the truth itself, but negate a dual mind, which we misunderstand the truth or our object. That is called, it must be, that dual mind must be negated, because the truth is completely never contaminated by this deluded mind. And also the truly non-empty is in this paragraph, the truth itself as the excellent boundless quality. Supporting, maintaining, characterized by maintaining truth itself, simultaneously maintaining all sentient beings. This is so-called Dharma, we say. In Sanskrit, Dharma means to have these peculiarity, the to maintain itself. That is meaning of Dharma. So two kinds of truths we have to know. Otherwise, there is no chance to know what the truth is. So in Majjhimaka, I think Nagarjuna mentioned chapter 24, the chapter 24 and number 8, 9, 10. Nagarjuna mentions the teaching by the Buddhas of the Dharma has recourse to truths. The word inscorned truth, and the truth which is the highest sense. Those who do not know distribution of the two kinds of the truth do not know the profound point in the teaching of the Buddhas. The highest sense of the truth is not told apart from practical behavior and without having understood the highest sense, one cannot understand Nirvana. So without understanding these two kinds, the highest sense of the truth, that is the truth completely independent from words, that is highest sense of the truth. Second is the other truth is the truth manifested in the human world. That is secular aspect of the truth. The secular aspect of the truth. the other one is ultimate aspect of the truth. So without understanding these two kinds of the truth, it is impossible to approach, to reach the nirvana, which means to have perfect freedom. So, next, number two, number one, if so, what is the true empty? True empty. So, one by one, describes what the truth is, the true empty is. Suchness is empty because from the beginning it has never been related to any defiled senses of existence. So from this point, and excuse me, let me read more, it is free from all marks of individual distinction of things, and it has nothing to do with thoughts conceived by a deluded mind. So first sentence, suchness is empty because from the beginning it has never been related. Related to any defiled state of existence. So from this point, truly empty, indicate, the wholeness. Wholeness of the subject and the object. This paragraph, first paragraph, mentions the subjective objective views on the human world, human life. Subjective and subject and object. The subjective and objective views on the human world. Okay. And this part mentions that truly empty is the wholeness of subject and object. Wholeness, not separate. That is a truly empty, so called the truth in words. Truth in words. That's why he says, from the beginning it has never been related to any defiled state of existence. So what is a defiled state of existence? Next, it says, it is free from all marks of individual distinction of the things. First, individual, all marks of individual distinction of things. This is objective view. Okay, objective view. So, all marks of the individual distinction of things. And next it says, it has nothing to do with thoughts conceived by a deluded mind. This is subjective view. Without subject, it is impossible for object to exist. Without object, subject doesn't exist. So object and subject interrelated, But unfortunately, this subject, anyway, act on the its object simultaneously misunderstands its object. So that's why that is deluded mind. It is impossible for us to understand our object as it really is, because later this means we always distinguish subject and object constantly from moment to moment. So it's very hard to keep away from that. And also the problem is that our recognition, our cognition doesn't realize that human mind misunderstands object. That is a very dimension anyway. So that's why we misunderstand the object, because subject is already a deluded mind, right? So that's why the truth in words, real truth, is completely free from this misunderstanding, the subjective misview, misunderstanding, or objective misunderstanding. See? Completely free from. So that's why he says, from the beginning it has never been related to any defiled states of existence. So whatever you see, you understand. Even though you say, I understand perfectly, this is already deluded. Even though you say, I get enlightenment, it is deluded. Or even though you say, I understand the truth as it is exactly, no matter how long you practice, anyway, it is deluded. This is very important. And then that mention, anyway, lets you know what is the real truth is. If you don't know, you become always troublemaker. Look at the human world, always fighting. Because they believe that they believe always their understanding, their experience, anyway, is truth. Their religion is truth. So, by this strong belief and strong experience, we fight each other. That's why this negative way, and the truly empty, is kind of not positive way of understanding, but it is very important, because through this negative, aspect of expression of the truth, we can know what the truth is. In order to know real truth, we have to anyway reflect upon ourselves like this constantly. So whatever you say, right or wrong, neutral or perfect understanding, that is deluded already. Okay? Deluded means individual. It is individual. Okay? Truth, what you have understood perfectly, becomes individual experience of the truth. Okay? That time, that truth is now universal. So very naturally, you really attach to it. Then problem is you cannot have a relation, you cannot communicate with the people who have never experienced the truth. So that is discrimination. Very naturally. comparison, a sense of comparison, and a sense of confliction, and thus stress comes up. So that's where first paragraph says, from the beginning it has never been related to any defiled state of existence, because it is free from all marks of individual distinction of the things. Whatever you understand that your object, it is not right. Okay? That is your understanding. And it has nothing to do with thoughts conceived by a deluded mind. That's why your understanding is yours, but you have to know something spirit, some so-called spirit of your own understanding. In other words, behind your understanding, or beyond your understanding, individual understanding. There is something more. It's a huge one. So that's why he says it has nothing to do with the thoughts. Thoughts. Okay, if so, let's see the all marks, let's see all marks of individual distinction of things in little detail, in details. Okay. That will be in the next paragraph. It should be understood that the essential nature of suchness is neither with marks nor without marks. Neither with marks, nor without marks. Nor is it both with and without marks simultaneously. It is neither with a single mark, nor with different marks, nor is it both with a single and with different marks simultaneously. So, from this point, the all marks of individual distinction of things are that the truth is perceived in the state of being, in the state of non-being, no being. Okay. In other words, with marks or without marks. That means being or not, no being. Being means what is. No being means what is not. We always have common sense, the common evaluation, common type of evaluation through being or no being, okay? Not being or not no being, like this, and both being and not no being. Buddhism follows this pattern. In order to know how your consciousness always working, how your consciousness follows, what kind of pattern your consciousness follows if you see your object. Okay. So very naturally we follow, our consciousness follows a certain pattern that is the state of the being, a being or no being, is what is or what is not. The next, not being, not what is. Or not no being means not what is not. You understand? Yeah, it is a mic. If you see the microphone, you say microphone is here. Next, microphone is not here. Next says microphone is not being. Microphone is not being, it says. So there is a kind of pattern. So finally says, microphone is box. Okay. Being, here it is, or not being. Box. After your death, what is death? Where are you heading for after death? The other world is, the other world exist? Yes or not? Next, no yes. And no no. And next, you say, but yes and no. This is private office. Whatever you think, whatever you discuss about your object or about your subject, very naturally, your cognition, the cognition follows this kind of pattern. That is called all marks of individual distinction of things. Okay? Distinction of things. But actually, it is very difficult to understand your object or subject or life and death, good and bad, following this pattern because everything is changing. Okay? It's very difficult to understand. For instance, there is a sentence, this is gone, okay? This is gone. At that time, this implicates something to be in this sentence. So from this point, what does it mean? This is gone. But this means, in this sentence, implicates something to be. In the next, but in the predicate, it says, is gone. So what do you mean, is gone? Because this is already something to be. And say, this is gone. It's impossible to say so. To say about something it to be already gone, you can't say so. You can't explain. Because they're already gone. But you say, this is gone. Or another sentence, John is gone. Well, it means that John can't be found here, but to expect that he could be found somewhere, or that John, who was here, is gone now. Like this. So you use all sentences like this. John is gone. But it's really impossible to say about John who is gone. If you use a John already, John is a person who was here. You already expect this situation. And then next says, he's gone. Or maybe you may say, excuse me. So, from this point, as long as this or John is premised, it is impossible for you to mention entirely now. No, you cannot explain entirely now. For instance, you cannot explain, it is impossible for us to mention your death because you're gone. Okay?
You cannot. Because if you say you are gone, you are completely gone. That is your business, not my business. Not something you should know from your business. You are gone, that reality is something you should know, you should with it. But you are already gone. So who knows? If you die, we say, Karagiri died. And everyone understands, oh yes, Karagiri died. That is concept of death. You understand. You understand concept of death. You never know real death. Karagiri is real death. Because Karagiri die is my business, not your business. For instance, I attain enlightenment. It is my business, not your business. You know? Do you understand? That I say, I attain enlightenment. Then you say, wow, wonderful, Karagiri. But I don't think you really bow to who, what? Concept of enlightenment. So, real enlightenment is no one knows. Okay? So it's very difficult to understand something according to the certain pattern. So called it is being or it is not being itself. It's very difficult. Everything is changing. And also everything is, everything exists according to teaching of interconnected, interdependent co-originations. So it's very difficult to say. To say about the death itself, real death, no. It's very difficult to say. And also here is an interesting sentence. For instance, there is no round triangles. No round triangle. No one believes in the round triangle. But even in this sentence, something to be is foreseen. Foreseen. It is impossible for you to state entire non-existence. So-called non-round, well, anyway. Something not, completely not. You can't say so. But if you say there is no round triangle, maybe you expect that maybe somewhere, you expect somewhere round triangle could be, might be. Because already you expect. You have an image of something. But an image is already a being, alright? Even though you think, if you can't think something, it's already being. You can't ignore this. You have to live, you have to think your life with this image too. Okay, whatever you think. Anyway, or if you use a one word, around the words, many beings exist. Imagination, visualization, okay? Connected with your memory, connected with heredity, connected with your past life, present life, future life, anyway. And then something happens around one word. Okay? That's why only one word, single word, doesn't exist alone. So it's connected with all beings. That's why you cannot, you know, judge, evaluate your object or subject or anything through a single patterns, so-called sentence you have used. So through the sentence, it's very difficult to understand something real. So that's why this Buddhist mentions truth is beyond the world. The truth of death is beyond the world. Whatever. Okay. So it is because everything exists. According to the principle of interdependent co-origination. In the sutra it says, people in the secular world have the standard of the excessive two-sided idea, being or no being. If you see closely origination of existence as it really is, according to right wisdom, no being or what is not doesn't exist in this world, nor a being, certain pattern of condition, so called what is, exists if you see closely, extinction of existence with the right wisdom, because everything is changed. If you see real picture of extinction, appears, disappears, if you really understand disappearance, you cannot judge all sentient beings according to a certain pattern so called what is or being. So completely you have to know something beyond words, something beyond the object you have seen anyway. This is a real picture of microphone's existence, your subject, the subjective existence, anyway. So, for instance, let's see the true picture of the self. Yourself, Karagiris. Karagiri was born in 1928, and then he has been, living until now. So, at that time, the self named Karagiri doesn't change. It changed. From moment to moment, he is growing. So from this point, his personality, his knowledge, everything is gone. So every day, he's different. So there is no particular one type of Karagiris. No. It's always changing. No avocado seed, so called Karagiri. No. Always changing. But on the other hand, if you see Karagiri today, anyway, you can imagine for Karagiri what he was yesterday and what he will be. So from this point, through the yesterday to present, to future, there is one type of Karagiri is always there. In other words, the one ground of the Karagiri, the same and one type of Karagiri itself. And then you can understand development, change of Karagiri's personalities. Anyway. So that's why, what is the true picture of the self? True picture of the self is sometimes operating in the state of, what to say, continuation in discontinuation. Missing. All discontinuation in continuation exists. But it cannot be understood by the category of the idea of continuation and discontinuation, but by being free from attachment to these ideas. So real picture of the self is not fitting into this category. So called continuation in discontinuation or discontinuation in continuation. No. Because real reality of the self, which is always growing and changing day by day from moment to moment, is nothing to grasp anyway. It's dynamic. So if you say self is operating in the state of the continuation of discontinuation, well, this is already a certain path, so called, you know, path with marks, nor without marks, something like this. So, it's a kind of not wonderful the discriminations, a wonderful function of your mind. If you know the real picture of the self, which is going in discontinuation, in continuation, continuation, in discontinuation, that understanding is pretty good, but still, that is not real understanding. Still deluded. So you have to know something more than this. So real life, the truth of the self, truth of your object, is constantly going beyond this category, any categories. So, next, same applied to the next part. It is neither with a single mark nor with different marks. Not with a single mark nor not with different marks. Nor is it both with a single and with different marks simultaneously. This is, for instance, nirvana, or the maybe you can ask the is the truth one with the phenomena, or truth and phenomena are same things, or they are different, or maybe they are both. If you try to know real relation between the truth and phenomena, we try to follow a certain path. And then it says, the truth and phenomena are one, same. So that is one way to understand the relation between what truth and phenomena. Next, someone says, no, they are not one. So they are different. This is another path. And finally, someone says, well, they are kind of combination. So both. This is a part of the pattern too. But you never understand what the relation between the truth and phenomena. No. So real relation between the truth and phenomena is completely beyond this pattern or cycle. But unfortunately or fortunately, we have to follow this kind of patterns. But if you follow this kind of patterns, you are touched too. That is a problem. That's why constantly we have to say, your pattern is fine, but don't attach to your understanding, because your understanding is already followed according to a certain pattern. So you never understand anything as it is through any patterns of thinking or understanding. So that is the sentence, okay? So finally, the second paragraph from the bottom at page 35. In short, since all enlightened men discriminate with their deluded minds from moment to moment, they are alienated from suchness. Hence, the definition empty. But once they are free from their deluded minds, they will find that there is nothing to be negated. So, in short, since all enlightened men discriminate with their deluded minds from moment to moment, so we can't understand the subject and the object. We can't understand the object because subject has already deluded mind. Deluded mind means a state that mind doesn't reach the truth itself, or the deluded mind means that cognition as discrimination doesn't realize how deluded it is. No, that is characteristic cognition. If you involve in cognition, you just call it. For example, like a dream. It's just like a dream. A dreamer doesn't realize how his dream while dreaming. No. Even though in a dream you say, oh, it is a dream, but it's still you enjoy very much. Still you are, your body and the mind is completely soaked in the stream of dream. That's it. And then says, you say, oh, it is dream. But even though that thinking is also in the stream of dream. So whatever you think, all things are in the stream of dream. So when you are, in the stream of dream, dream doesn't know how, what his dream. That is called deluded mind. That's why in the Diamond Sutra, Bodhisattva always in a certain situation, but he never be blind. So he is always clear. But he is in the darkness, but his light is not dark. His light, his mind, his bodies are always not in the darkness. That always he said, the Diamond Sutra says. So that means Bodhisattvas are always in the dream, but he or she is always free from the dream. So if you have a certain a certain standard of your view on the human world, human life, it is fine. But I need to do it. And it's very difficult to realize because you are dreaming. So that is a deluded mind. So that's why he says, an enlightened man discriminate with their deluded mind from moment to moment, constantly. Your understanding, so-called, I'm dreaming in the stream of dreaming. It's pretty good. It's better than nothing anyway. So still there is a chance. Right in the middle of dream, still you can have a chance to know your dream. So that realization is pretty good for us. So that's why this book, Buddhism of Mentions, you should know your cognitions. Constantly, the mind is working from moment to moment. You should know that fact, reality. Then, that realization anyway takes you to a little bit freedom from cognition on the basis of your basis of a certain pattern or category. So you can be free from. So the realization, sometimes realization takes you to the limit of your cognition, limit of the subject, understanding subject and understanding object, limit. You come to dead end anyway. That is realization. Then simultaneously, this door is open. Okay? The limit is not set or fixed. A partition in front of you. That partition is very soft, just like a curtain. The moment when you touch it, it's open, disappears. And then, huge expanse. Vast expanse of existence is right in front of you. That is characteristic of realization, okay? So-called spiritual transformations at 360 degrees anyway. Sometimes 180. So this is, that's why we have to say always empty. This is the definition of emptiness, okay, empty. But once they are free from their deluded minds, they will find that there is nothing to be created. So if you realize this deluded mind, how it is going, you can be free from. So next, number two, truly non-empty. Non-empty, it mentions before, anyway, it is implication of itself, boundless, the quality which the truth itself possesses. The truth is of real entity and as boundless nature of its richest quality. This is meaning of non-empty. So non-empty means not deny, not destroy the truth itself, essence of the truth. But we should deny the deluded mind in this book, okay? But in Prajnaparamita, in the Buddha's teaching of Prajnaparamita, it doesn't say so. In Prajnaparamita, we say, form is emptiness. intimacy is for. Means object itself is intimacy. Not duty, not image of your understanding is empty. No. Form itself is empty. Your object itself is empty. Subject itself is empty. That's why next, emptiness is form. This sentence comes into existence. If empty implies to negate a dualistic mind, you cannot say empty is form. But form is empty, simultaneously empty is form, means completely empty form, object itself is empty. So there is a difference. But in Prajnaparamita Sutra, it doesn't mention why the object and subject itself is empty. How emptiness is related with object itself. Well, what part of the object is emptiness? It doesn't mention. Just Prajnaparamita bring up, okay? That sentence, that teaching, that just emptiness. So it's very difficult to understand it. But in this book, little difference, okay? Because we want to know what part of the object is emptiness. Completely whole part of the whole thing is empty. How about subject? How about subject who was looking at the object? It is also emptiness. This book, that is Buddhist psychology, is obvious. Analyzing, synthesizing like this. Okay. So a little bit different. So very naturally it become logical, very rational. So in this book, that's why truth itself is never denied. But deluded mind is negated in this book. Because later it says Tathagatagarbha means the Buddha nature in you. Buddha nature is present in you, whoever you are. Tathagata is, anyway, is present in you always. That is a teaching of idea of Tathagatagarbha. Garbha means literally. Okay. So, since it has been made clear that the essence of all things is empty, in this case, essence of all things is empty means not clear understanding the truth itself. That's why it next says, that is devoid of illusion. This illusion must be empty, but the truth is the truth as a whole, constantly truth. But still there is a little difference understanding about the truth, the view on truth, right? In this book, well, maybe you don't understand, but maybe you should listen to. In this book, truth is understood in two ways. One, truth is completely truth as a whole, which exists constantly, eternally. On the other hand, truth is contaminated by human ignorance. Means truth is operating in the human world. The moment when the truth operates in the human world, it is contaminated by deluded mind. So it appears as deluded mind because it doesn't cling to its own being. Because truth itself doesn't have its own particular, the strong ideas itself. So truth doesn't have substance, its own substance. So that's why truth is real truth, which is eternal, but simultaneously truth doesn't have its own substance, so it appears any place, in all directions. Then in the human phenomenal world and not phenomenal world. So when it appears in the phenomenal world, it is contaminated. It is connected with deluded mind that is called contaminated, defiled. But in the Buddhist psychology, it's called, the merely mind only. Merely mind only. That is, we call yishti, Buddhist psychology. In this teaching, I think the truth is always the truth, immutably and permanently. It is called Mui Dharma of the Mui. Mui means the unconditioned Dharma. So truth is completely truth. Nothing to do with phenomenal world. So that is very idealistic. That is Buddhist psychology. Abhidharma Kosha. So Abhidharma Kosha is very clear, one by one. But that's why truth is complete truth, absolute, in which exists eternally. But here, a little bit different. Truth is eternal, but simultaneously, truth is related closely with phenomenal world. That's why when it appears in the phenomenal world, it is something different. Okay, so since it has been made clear that the essence of all things is empty, that is devoid of illusion, the true mind is eternal. The true mind is eternal, permanent, immutable. So truth is immutable and at the same time, conditional. Okay? Conditional. That's why I said truth is eternal, but simultaneously it appears in the phenomenal world. Means, according to phenomenal world, anyway, it's operate. So operate. That is conditional. So the truth is characterized by eternity and condition. Change. That is idea of the truth in this book. So in other words, the truth is eternal and immutable. From the other end, truth is allowed to change in accordance to circumstances and, conditions. That is so-called truth in words. Okay? Truth in words, truth appeared in the human world. And it says, pure and self-sufficient. Therefore, it is called non-empty. So the truth itself as the boundless virtuous quality of purity or clearness. This is the truth itself. So truth itself, complete. Purity and clearness, complete by itself. It is not something we try to understand, or we try to escape, or we try to be with. It is not something you should produce. It is already. It is already something complete beyond your speculation. So that is a self-sufficient. That is a Dharma, so called Dharma, we say. So Dharma is completely something maintaining itself constantly. So before Buddha is born in this world, or Buddha, even though regardless of whether Buddha was born in this world, is gone. Or nuclear weapon destroys whole world, but still there is a sun. This is called matrix. It's very difficult to understand in words, that's why we say emptiness. Why not the arguments? But emptiness is not a real emptiness, that's why quality of the emptiness or contents of emptiness is called interdependent coordinations. This is the structure of emptiness, how emptiness operates in the human world. That is a teaching in the Majjhima.
Okay. 10 minutes more. We finish, okay? That's why it is called empty, non-empty, right? Non-empty. And also there is no trace of particular marks to be noted in it. So truth doesn't have any trace, any marks. No trace of the any marks particularly. So called, it is no color, no smell. Even though you say no smell, no color, it is already trace, a certain trace of certain ideas. Okay? So truth doesn't have any trace of particular marks. So something more than marks, no marks, or but marks or no marks. That is called no trace. So the truth is one, or a partless one, which is eternal. So the truth itself is of a single mark, so called one. We say that's why we can't, it's very difficult to say in words, that's what Fanon says, one mind. Or partly one, partless one, partless one. If you say one, you already understand the one opposed to two. So that one is understanding the truth through the one, you already leave the trace of the word, so called one. So it's not a real one. That's why partless one is complete one, absolute one.
Partless. P-A-R-T-L-E-S-S.
Oh, my.
Partless. So, okay. So, single marks or one mind means when something in common can be found among more than two kinds of color, it is what is called color as I use. If only one color, you can't have idea of colors. But only there are the colors more than two, and then you can find something in common. Okay? And then you can have an idea of colors. But only one color, you can't have any idea of color, because only one in this world. Or there is only a single finger, so called here is a one finger,
okay.
Just like a rotating master always shows the one finger. When the people ask, monks ask what the Buddha nature is, he always shows. Whatever kind of answer comes, he always shows the one finger. Means I alone is the Anand one, okay, it's one. So if there is only a single finger like this, nothing else around this one finger, how can this one finger touch? How can you know this one finger? Nothing. If you know, even slightly, here it is. That is already objectively you can see this one. But in this world, only one thing. How can you know? You can't have even the idea of one. No. The idea of the perfect one cannot be explained. So, the perfect one is no form. Perfect single form is no form. Because you can't see. So that's why shikan, if you concentrate on the breath as it is exactly, there is no form, no trace. That is called shikan. Anyway, shikan. Shikantara. You don't believe, but it is really true. That's why we have to practice anyway. That's why you sit down without thinking, but you try to think. In order to spend the wasting time, but it's not wasted. So, and the next is as it is the spirit that transcends thoughts. Well, that's what the spirit that transcends. The cognition of the truth is not dichotomy of the subject and object, but unity of subject and object, cognizing subject as an object as a whole. This is the sphere means object, okay? That transcends thoughts. So, the truth, cognition of the truth must be something, means object. If you want to say object, okay? The cognition of the truth is kind of object which should transcend your thoughts, because your thought is already deluded. Because your thought is discrimination. Which is characterized by simply between the subject and object clearly. Okay. So that is your thoughts. discrimination. It is deluded. It is called deluded. You never know the truth itself. That's why cognition of the truth is, if you want to say sphere or object, if you want to know the truth as an object, maybe you say the cognition of the truth is a sphere which transcends. Be free from your thoughts. That is cognition of the truth. That's why cognition, in other words, cognition itself, strictly speaking, okay? Cognition itself. Not by your cognition, and then you realize, anyway, I realize the truth itself. No. Cognition itself. Because to swim itself is temporarily called swim. Or if you are there, right in the middle of action stream of the swimming, you call swimmer, temporarily. But this is, anyway, that idea comes from dichotomies. But if you want to know real swim itself, you must be there. You just be there. That is cognition of the truth, which appears as action, so called swim. So if you swim with total function, you don't know what swim is. That is called shikan, anyway shikan. Right. That is called the free from cognition, free from thoughts, or transcend thoughts. That's why if you want to be free from thoughts, you always, practice, and you must be always in process of practice, action, with clear mind, not blind, because action is very dangerous. Okay? Because immediately action goes this way or that way. Because action creates desire. Very natural. So you have to take care of action as clear as it is. Okay? So with your clear mind, you have to do it. That is practice in precision. Dogen Zenji means precision. Practice in precision. When you do a show, your whole body and mind must do a show. Not only two hands. When you play the piano, you have to play the piano with the whole body and mind. That is called shikan, your actions. That time, your mind, your body operates clear. That time it is called free from thoughts. Okay? Free from thoughts. It doesn't mean to try to see something, but to see it as it really is. Means when you swim, we have swim as you really are. That's it. Not trying to know swim, or not try to swim. You just swim. You just swim. So that swim is smooth. Swim is continuation of the human action in smooth succession. Very smooth succession. So very natural, you realize very silent proof. If you are just walking in smooth succession, very natural, silent proof is given to you. You don't know, but you only know. But other people don't know. That is spiritual security. So that is so called, anyway, this is so called the cognition of the truth, understanding of the truth. So understanding of truth is what? It's very practical, every day, it's clear, in when, where, when you act, when you live. But your mind must be clear. That's why it's a little difficult. Your thoughts should be operating, numerous. You must be free from thoughts. So you have to know what the same is, you should learn what the same is. But you must be free from thoughts. Means jump into the ocean anyway. Swim. And then at that time there is no space. Try to know what the same is. You just swim. The swim is going in a smooth. Last sentence says the is and is in harmony with enlightenment alone. That's why finally the combination of the truth can be actualized by wisdom of enlightenment. If you realize what is the knowing of the truth is. Knowing the truth, cognition of the truth is very quiet, very active practice. And it's yours, not others' stories. It's yours. So others is not you. So I have to do it. Okay? If I want to know the truth, I have to do it. I have to know. I have to be there. Okay? It's not others' stories. It's not moral discussions. So that's why it says is in harmony with enlightenment alone. That is wisdom of enlightenment. If you attain enlightenment means if you see the human world in a broad scale, perspective, it is called enlightenment, or practically you can have something. Okay? That is enlightenment. Wisdom comes from enlightenment. Enlightenment itself is wisdom. When the enlightenment occurs in your life, it is called wisdom anyway. So, if you understand what the real meaning of the swim, anyway, that is enlightenment. And then, jump into the ocean. At that time, wisdom of enlightenment takes care of you. Takes care of your swimming. Very nice. So what is the wisdom of enlightenment? It's very quiet practice. So called shikan. We say shikan. Simple spirit. Or samadhi. We say samadhi. From this point, your body and even the actions of swimming are all right in the middle of samadhi. Very quiet. Showing of the strict truth. Understanding of the truth. Of the ocean, your body, and even the action of the swimming. All samadhi. That samadhi is called right acceptance. So, whole things going. According to our Sanskrit Sutra, and on the human beings, all sentient beings are right in the middle of samadhi. Huge samadhis. So we are swimming in the ocean of the samadhi. Right? So that is in harmony with enlightenment law. So through this, two kinds of truth we have to know. Real truth. Real truth. That real truth is in the last.